up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Guacamelee is the game for this week's episode. Guacamelee is a 2D Metroidvania action platformer, and a lot of similarities with games we've covered before like Gunbrella, Eight Doors, Narita Boy, Apotheon, but any slew of Metroid action platform, this would be right up that alley. The game was originally released in April of 2013 on PS3 and Vita, and it was cross-buy between those two platforms. And then in August of 2013, it came to PC. In February of 2014, it came to Mac and Linux. And then July of 2014, it came to PS4, Wii U, Xbox 360, Xbox One. And then finally, in October of 2018, it arrived on the Switch. The game was developed by Drinkbox Studios, who we've talked about before, because they also developed Severed, which was a previous game on the podcast. And there's been a sequel to Guacamelee, Guacamelee 2, and more recently they developed a game called Nobody Saves the World, which I'm hearing very good things about, and I'm anxious to jump into. And the game was self-published by Drinkbox Studios, so big shout-out to them. There were several DLCs released, mainly a costume pack and something called El Diablo's Domain, which is like an extra area, and that was released shortly after the launch originally in 2013. Those were out in the summer of 2013. The game has multiple editions, and this is a pretty old game, so what is available now is probably just the sort of compilation editions, but eventually the game had a gold edition, which included the game and the DLC, and then more recently the game had a Super Turbo Championship edition, which was the game and the DLC, and I think a lot of updates. Apparently there's a lot more content in this Super Turbo Championship edition. And then of course we said it has a sequel in Guacamelee 2, and that was released in August of 2018, as well as some of the other ports in December and January later that year and the following year. The game has had physical releases. So there was a PS4 physical release through V-Blank Entertainment, I believe in July of 2014. I'm not sure where it was released. I think maybe just major retailers. But Limited Run did a physical Vita version that was released in June of 2019. And then in May of 2019, there was a 1-2 Punch collection that was released, and that was on PS4 and Switch, and that actually combined the first and the second game, as well as a double-sided poster and some other goodies in there. And then finally, I couldn't really find the date on this, but there was an original Steelbook Collector's Edition for PC that was released through Game Trust. I don't know when that was released. But I saw a bunch of those on eBay. Looks like they were very limited in supply. The game released with an MSRP of $14.99. I believe that is the current price. I'm actually not sure when it was not the Gold or the Super Turbo Champion Edition. But that Limited Run Games Vita release, that released for $30. And the 1-2 Punch Collection for PS4 and Switch, that released for $40. And I think that is still available on major retailers. Runtime of the game, if you're just running straight through, not doing any extras or even exploring, you could easily get through this game in about 5 or 6 hours. But to get everything, you could really take your time and not even spend 15 hours in the game. And so me, I've been playing it on the PS4 version. So I have the Super Turbo Championship Edition or whatever. And I actually got that on PlayStation Plus. So unfortunately, when I got that, I was actually hoping it would be cross-buy, but the PS4 version is not cross-buy with Vita, only the PS3 version, or so I understand. So I've been playing that on my PS5, as well as sometimes on the PlayStation Portal. And in terms of recommendation, the fact that it was available on PlayStation Plus was a big thing, but Colin Moriarty over at Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, he had been beating the drum on this game way back to the days at Kinda Funny, and even possibly even back when he was at IGN. So this is definitely a long-standing recommendation from him. And I've put in close to 10 hours. I am at the final boss. All I would have to do is go play him and try to beat him. But I'm really trying to be thorough, and I'm really picking up a lot of the collectibles and exploring for all the secrets. Let's talk gameplay for Guacamelee. So this is a 2D kind of side-scrolling Metroidvania, so let's go through some of the basics. Nothing really new here. You're moving left to right in a 2D environment. You can dodge roll, and you can roll through enemies and through different things, and you can jump. There will also be prompts to interact with different things, whether it's picking things up, whether it's talking to people, or whether it's using certain objects. And then you will have a melee attack, so that's going to be the primary gameplay of what you're doing just physically as you're moving your character. So this is a platformer, so in terms of platforming and traversals, obviously jumping is a big thing. There is some jump sensitivity with the button, so you can vary how far or how high that you're going, and you will need to for some of the platforming. There'll be a lot of staircases that are on an angle, platforms to go up and down through, so you're going to be jumping up through and jumping down through a lot of things, very similar to games like Apotheon that we've talked about before. And you'll have platforms that are moving, crumbling, rotating, phasing in and out of being there, and so that's going to allow for a lot of challenges and complications with the platforming. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a Metroidvania if you didn't get moveset upgrades that'll allow you to do combat differently, but also allow you to traverse differently and potentially reach things that you could not reach before. So let's talk about the combat. This is going to be a big thing because you have this melee attack, hence Guacamelee. And as you're hitting the same button for melee attacks, if you do it a couple times in a row, there'll be sort of automatic combos that your character will do different things. Maybe at the end of the combo, they'll like throw somebody up, or they'll push them a little further away, and then the enemy will fall. Staggering enemies is going to be a big thing with your melee attacks. Often if you just keep punching them, it'll kind of stagger them wherever they are and stop whatever attack they were doing. Not even in a combo. If you just walk up to an enemy and they're about to attack, I think if you just hit the melee button once for one punch, it'll disrupt their attack. And like I said, there will be combos that'll kind of send them flying. And then you'll be able to do different directional things with your melee attack. Like if you go up with it, they'll kind of uppercut and shoot the enemy up. And if you're in the air and you hit the melee attack while you're in the air, they'll do like a down pound. So you're run-of-the-mill basics. Now, what's interesting is if you hit an enemy enough times kind of in a row, I guess there's like an internal poise meter where a prompt will show up above that enemy where you can grab that enemy, and then you'll get an arrow that you can move around, and you're basically aiming to throw them in any direction. So this is really nice and something that you should use a lot, because I believe there's a pretty strong invincibility factor while you're grabbing someone. So your character will punch them, and then if the prompt comes up and you hit it, you'll kind of just sit there in the air, and while you're aiming before the arrow kind of times out, I don't think you can get hit by most things. There might be some rare exception to that. But while you're in combat, doing a lot of melee attacks, grabbing and throwing enemies, you will get staggered if you get hit. And more often than not, anytime you get hit, you kind of get tossed over, like flat on your back. This can be a little annoying. It's a super slow recovery. And it's kind of rare that enemies will get a lot of hits on you if you're, you know, being very active in the combat. So I would suggest staying fast paced and sort of dodging a lot. And again, trying to interrupt enemy attacks, because it is rare, but sometimes you can get kind of stagger locked where you'll get tossed and then you're like, okay, I have to recover. And then you finally get up and then all of a sudden something else hits you. I've definitely had certain combat scenarios where I got knocked over like 3 times in a row, and it's just like the recovery time is so long, you're kind of sitting there. So it definitely encourages you to be more fast paced, whether with the dodging, whether with the combos, and definitely interrupt enemy attacks. You will get special moves that are like power moves, and these will use your stamina. We'll talk about stamina in a minute. But basically, these are going to be different directional swipes where you'll push in a direction and you'll use the button for the power moves. It's different from the button for the melee attack. So on PlayStation, melee attacks are square, but the power moves, you press circle and a direction or no direction, and you'll do one of the power moves as you learn them. So these are going to be like high damage and definitely going to stagger enemies. You can probably hit multiple enemies at the same time, whether it's a side swipe, whether it's an uppercut, a down pound. And again, these are going to be kind of the traversal mechanics as well. So for example, once you get the uppercut, like you kind of shoot up and to the side at an angle. So any platform that you couldn't get to before, now all of a sudden, once you get this move, you can go up through a platform and make a jump that you couldn't before. So this is going to have platforming consequences, but also there are going to be different obstructions in the levels where using this certain move will actually be a key to unlock it. It's actually going to break certain bricks so that you can keep traversing. And as you get more of these power moves, the game will introduce you to enemies that are kind of coded in this shield aura of a certain color. And there's, I think, 4 different colors. So depending on which move would be needed to break that sort of faux shield, it's going to be colored that color. So you'll get pretty used to seeing this once you see the first one, or once you get multiple of these power moves, you'll start seeing the different colors. And the game really tutorializes this for you nicely. You'll also get Intenso mode, which for comparison is kind of like God of War Spartan mode. So you'll have a meter at the top, and when it's past a certain point, you can turn this on. And once it's on, it'll slowly tick down. And while you're in that mode, you're doing a lot more damage to enemies. And you can actually just keep hitting them to kind of prolong or keep that meter from going down. I think anytime you hit an enemy, it kind of gives a little bit. Or maybe it's when you kill an enemy, it gives a little back in that meter. So it definitely encourages you to be more aggressive. And obviously, you're doing more damage. So there's no reason not to be. Enemies in this game are a nice variety, I feel, especially for the game length. This is not a very long game, but the game introduces different enemies of varying size, varying speed, a lot of melees, a lot of projectiles. When you start to get more versed in the combat, when you start to progress more in the game, you're going to get more encounters that have a higher number of enemies. And as you get introduced to new ones, whether it's because of moves that you come across, they'll kind of be put into the pool. And then your encounters will have more variety of these enemies. So it really starts to be a challenge because you have to battle different types of enemies. So you're going to have melee enemies that some are basic, some are a little faster than basic, some are heavy hitters, some are big, some are medium size or small. And when you get more advanced, some of the melee guys will have different shields, whether physically or like we talked about the different color ones. Some of them will be invincible for a time when they're doing a certain attack and you have to kind of jump over them. And then others will like teleport in and out. And then definitely a lot of enemies that shoot projectiles, ones that sit in one static place and throw projectiles at you, some that fly around. There are these ones that are like, I guess they'd be like armadillos with spikes that are kind of roly-poly. So once they coil up, they turn into this spike ball that bounces around. And there's a couple unique enemies like that, and certainly some more advanced ones as you get further on. And so in terms of handling these encounters, different strategies, like we talked about, you're going to get power moves, definitely throwing for that sort of short stint of invincibility. And if you throw an enemy where there's like a group of enemies, the body keeps going. So if it hits one enemy, it'll also hit whoever's behind them in that trajectory. You're going to have areas that are sort of open roam that you're traversing that have enemies in them. And then sometimes in some of these areas, you'll get into sort of a locked arena, like they'll lock behind you, and then so you have to beat all the enemies. And of course, further along in the game, this can turn into chaos, especially the locked areas. Definitely want to avoid that stagger lock, because getting hit, you really do have a slow recovery time. So use everything at your disposal. Use the dodge mechanic. You can dodge through a lot of different enemies. You roll pretty far. Use those power moves to hit multiple enemies, and then the throwing aspect. Let's talk about pacing and progressing in this game. So there are different locations that you can see on the map, And when you click the map, you'll see sort of a world map that has these different dots that are like the different locations, and they have all of their names. And then you can look at the maps of these specific areas, and these are going to be typical Metroidvania maps. But each of these areas is kind of isolated, and when you come to the end of it, you'll go on to a little loading screen, and then you'll kind of start a new location. Some of these areas are side-scrolling, like you're going to move, and then the camera will move with you. Others are kind of screen-to-screen, depending on the layout, depending on the landscape, especially ones that have sort of those locked little square areas that you're going to go in and have to fight a bunch of enemies. But the map will let you know if there's a certain door or a certain exit that goes to another area. And if you look at the map, it'll label them, or it'll say this way to Pico de Gaia, which is one of the names of the areas, or this one to like the Inferno or whatever. The game is main quest driven, so there's always a main objective. And on the map, there's always the location, whether it's in your little area map or in the world map, but a little icon that sort of shows where you need to go next to complete the objective. And then somewhere on the map screen, it'll say what the objective is, whether it's to find this person or now you have to traverse to this new area. It's really just one main quest at a time. There are side quests in this game that you can find by talking to NPCs, which you'll find a lot of at different villages, which are sort of safe areas. But side quests are not recorded anywhere. There's no journal, there's no logbook or anything like that. But when you come across an NPC that has a side quest, you'll see a little exclamation point in a circle above them telling you like, hey, talk to this person. But then you don't really get it recorded anywhere, so you have to kind of find out what they're talking about. Sometimes you need to go just in that area or in that town or in that screen to talk to certain people and solve the quest. Sometimes you need to go throughout the whole world. Like, there's a pretty wide range. Some of these are a little obtuse. I did look a couple of these up when I couldn't really figure out what I was doing. One was like, oh, you have to kill 5 of these enemies. I didn't even know what that enemy was, but I had killed 3 of them. Some of these are okay, but they're not really necessary in terms of like getting the full story or progressing through the game. It is a nice sort of coloring in, especially for the premise of some of them. It's not something that is going to trip you up that much. If you're a completionist, you can definitely do it. And of course, you will get rewards, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But a lot of what you can do besides the side quests is exploration. And again, if you look at the map, you can see in what room or in what stretch of certain areas that you haven't explored, because it's kind of blurred out in black. So you can explore as much as you want. You can find secrets. There are upgrades that you can find in this game for your character. There's currency. Most of these will be found in chests. So once you sort of find a secret area and there's a chest there, it's likely that that was the only thing there. But you can definitely do a lot of wandering, talking to NPCs that can give you a little context for the story. Obviously, the side quests, but exploring is something that you may want to do. You don't have to. Again, if you want to be in and out with 5 or 6 hours, you can definitely do that. But being thorough, I think the game is at least not big enough that you will get completely lost if you wander. There is fast travel in the game, and you actually find the first one fairly early. Each of the areas only has one fast travel point. Some of them, I think, actually don't even have one. It's a little annoying with the fast travel because some of these individual areas that you go into are actually really big and really expansive. And if you're looking to backtrack a little bit, you might see something on the map that's like on the complete other side of that area than where the fast travel location is. So you might have to work your way around it. Maybe if there's another exit to another area that's close to where you want to get, you might try a different path or warp to a different area and then kind of circumvent. So it can be a little cumbersome. Again, the game is not that big, so I never found it to be a major deterrent for exploring or trying to backtrack. And of course, you're unlocking these different combat moves that are also traversal moves. And these work as sort of access keys because you'll find these blocks that require you to hit them with these specific moves. So once you find them, you're now able to open those ways and you'll go back and look on the map. And this is sort of where the backtracking comes in, because once you get the new moves, you'll want to go back and see what all of those areas were that you could go to before. This is where the map detail is actually super helpful, because all these different moves are color-coded. You'll actually see the color-coded blocks on the map, reminding you where they were or helping you pick them out once you find that move. In terms of your character, so you have a couple different meters, you have hit points, you have stamina, you have the intenso meters, things that we've talked about before. With the HP or the intenso meter, These are interesting because you can refill them by killing enemies, or you'll find barrels randomly in the environment that you can break, and they'll refill your HP or your Intenso. The stamina is a little different because it's a number of boxes, and these boxes are used up anytime you use a power move, and then if you don't use it for a little bit, it'll regen slowly. You will eventually get a bunch of these in a row, so you can do a bunch of power moves in a row, but you will have to wait. There's a refresh for how quickly the boxes will fill back up again. And you will find upgrade pieces for all of these different things. And all of them will require 3 pieces, much like something like Zelda. So when you find 3 heart pieces, you will get a little boost in your max HP. When you find 3 of the skulls, they'll upgrade your stamina. So you get another box. And then you can get 3 pieces to increase your Intenso meter. And you'll get currencies. So anytime you kill enemies, anytime you find chests that have gold, you'll be getting gold, and that's the main currency. And there's also silver, which are these silver coins that have a skull on them. And these are going to be used for different things. So the silver is primarily used for buying costumes, and these seem cosmetic, but when you get to some of the more expensive ones, they actually have benefits. They can increase your attack power with melee, but they also have a consequence. So there's one that's like your throws do more damage, but your melee does less. So you can choose to use them if you buy them with silver, or you can just use the normal costumes that don't change any stats. But the gold is a big thing. Because you can upgrade a lot of different things about your character, and you can do this at any save point, and we'll talk about the frequency of those. But some of these are increasing the regen speed of your stamina boxes, increasing your damage with certain moves, some of the power moves, or you can buy pieces for stamina upgrades or HP upgrades. Maybe there's 5 of each of them, of the different pieces that you can buy from the save points. And finally, in terms of accessibility, there are difficulty levels in the game. So there's normal and hard. I played this through on normal. I think it's a fair challenge, and I like the pacing that it increases at. By the end of the game, with some of the things I've been exploring and some of the more challenging things, boss battles, they've definitely taken me a couple tries. So definitely a fair challenge. There's a lot of extra content, things that you don't have to do. There are certain places where you can do challenge rushes. There are secrets in the game, including a secret collectible that I didn't know about, but I looked up once I accidentally stumbled across one of them. And in terms of dying and getting hurt, you don't have lives in this game. You don't get a game over, which is very nice, but it can be a little confusing sometimes. Anytime you fall into a pit or sort of like a pool of acid or fire, what you'll do is it'll quickly put you back to the last safe ground you were at. So that's nice, especially if you're trying to figure out if you can make a jump, and if you fall into a pit, it just puts you right back. But anytime you lose all your HP, or anytime you encounter certain one-shot hazards, these are pretty rare, but you'll definitely remember them after it happens to you once. This will always bring you back to the last save point you were at. So if you run out of hit points or you hit these one-shot things, just be aware that'll bring you back to the last save point. And speaking of save points, the frequency of these is very high. Like in a given area, granted the areas are fairly big, there might be anywhere between like 10 and 15 save points, I feel. Definitely glad that there's a lot of save points, because anytime you walk by them, it'll auto-save. And of course, at these save points, you can purchase any of the ability upgrades, you can get different costumes. And then finally, there's multiplayer in this game. So you can have up to 4 people couch co-op. And I realized this because my wife was actually playing this game first, and she beat it. But a couple times I jumped in to sort of help her, and all I had to do was pick up a PS4 controller because she plays on the PS4. And I just jumped in, and all of a sudden, we're both fighting on the same screen. So definitely awesome if, you know, the game's a little tough for you, you want to play couch co-op. Really nice that this is included in this game. All right, let's talk about the vibe of Guacamelee. So in case you haven't realized, this game is Mexico. It bleeds Mexico. It's everything Mexico. It's so much. It's over the top. And it's really refreshing. So let's talk about some of the themes and the settings. So obviously, this is a melee combat game, but there's Lucha Libre, which is Mexican wrestling, and it is just littered with this. Your character is wearing a mask, and everything is melee combat based. There's throwing. It's just really over the top. The different moves that you do, the animations for the moves, like your character is just over the top, like slamming down on things. And sometimes it's like almost anime-like with like little cutscenes or little things on the side as something is happening with the story. And just the character and the dialogue, everything is dramatic. It's so intense, but it's so self-aware, I feel, whether it's with the way people talk or the way things are kind of tongue-in-cheek. I just love everything about the vibe of the game, it being Mexico, it being wrestling. It just leans into it so heavily, and it makes it really charming. And of course, with it being all about Mexico, there's a lot of words that are used, like luchador, which is you're a wrestler. The names of the different towns, I said before, Pico de Gallo, but some of these are clearly just in Spanish, and it just feels so at home. The different quests that you do, like at one point you have to get the ingredients for the world's greatest enchilada. Just some of the things that you're doing are, it seems like maybe borderline caricature, stereotype, but it also fits with the idea of wrestling. Like, things are just intense, and of course you got chickens and roosters going around. It's just everything that you might imagine Mexico to be, or things that are just really celebrating Mexican lore and culture. And the idea of the story, there's kind of a typical hero and a damsel of distress. The hero is sort of a rags to legend situation. The idea of selling your soul, or a certain character is selling their soul, and then you as the hero, you get a certain trainer or a sensei or whatever that's kind of building you up to fight this evil person. And the idea of the dead. I think the game starts on the Day of the Dead celebration, and you will actually go to the Land of the Dead, or at least you'll see sort of the other side of areas. And I don't want to spoil too much with the mechanics there. And of course, you can't have it without the music. So in terms of audio, the music is just unbelievable. It's so energetic. It's intense. It's mariachi at times. Other times it's sensual guitar, or there's horns. It's just infectious. As you're playing this, you cannot help but feel positive. And it's going to vary depending on if you're in towns or if you're in enemy areas or battle arenas. There's something so fun while you're playing this. You just feel like this is high intensity, high positivity Mexico wrestling. Everything that it tries to do, it does it 1,000%, and it hits it home to you from the moment you start the game. And in terms of visuals, it really just backs up the vibe, because it's nothing but colors and all kinds of colors. You got your yellows, your greens, your reds, your blues, the different outfits that you wear, the different enemies, the environments, all of these things just are so colorful, and everything just pops and is so vibrant. So your environments are a lot of open areas at times, but you see a lot of far landscapes in the back, or sometimes if you're inside of a building or a cavern, you see a lot of detail sort of in the immediate background. But some of your towns are going to have these structures that look like they're right in front of you, that might have platforms that are jutting out for you to jump on. The color seems very appropriate, like different buildings are kind of like this orange. And anytime you go to a town, there's like an archway that your character is literally running through, so you don't see them for a second. And I just like the vibe of that, because it's like the town name is on the archway. But wherever you go, the platforms are very well defined. Even if you're in a town, like, it's obvious that some of the things can be jumped on, while other things are just like the building structure in the immediate background. And your characters, these of course remind me a lot of Severed, but Severed was very close in, so this is a bit further back, a bit zoomed out. And they look like just compilations of construction paper, because the colors are so sharp and so vibrant. A lot of your characters have big torsos. The limbs can vary, especially on your character. I mean, you will see your character's hands, but they have a big torso because they're this like strong wrestler. But some enemies, like, you might not see fully their limbs because you don't really need to. So they do vary in detail. But a lot of what everyone is wearing is this Mexican garb. So obviously your character, They have their mask and, you know, they're ready to wrestle, but some of the enemies will have ponchos on or sombreros. Some of the NPCs might be in dresses or in suits or whatever. The main bad guy is actually wearing like the same costume from the Three Amigos, the black suit that has like a little bit of red and then sort of the white outline of them. But all these characters, whether you're in dialogue, they'll have these dramatic expressions. Just everything is very intense, very soap opery, but also very wrestling. And it's just, again, so charming. And a lot of these little visual effects like are very important. Like the enemies, some of them have tells, like their coloration will change when they're about to do certain attacks. And of course, the different keys, once you get the different moves, are very obvious with the coloration. I got a little confused with the red and green outline of enemies that you need to use the move on to kind of break that shield. But that's just a little bit of me because I'm kind of colorblind. But the different blocks that you're seeing, whether it's on the map or whether it's visually in front of you, those colors definitely pop to show you that contrast. And other little things, like you'll get a power where you're kind of swapping dimensions. And when you're standing there and there's something that will be different in another dimension, there's sort of like this sparkle on whether it's a platform or whether it's a wall that's making it obvious that this is going to not be there or it will be there if you swap dimensions. So little things like that. There's a lot of communication of detail visually that is done really well, and it makes it so that you can definitely understand what the game is trying to tell you, which is definitely always a plus. Let's wrap up the conversation about Guacamelee. This is an incredible bite-sized Metroidvania experience. I watched my wife play through it, and I was actually really proud that she beat it. I did help a little bit. I talked about jumping in as co-op, but watching her play it, it's a game that I had gotten on PlayStation Plus a while ago, so seeing her play through it, it kind of got me into it, and I knew I was always going to come back to it, but especially because Colin Moriarty has recommended this game ad nauseum. So I definitely wanted to jump in. Really good pacing of the Metroidvania tropes, getting the different moves, and also eventually by the end of the game having this real challenge synergy with the platforming and the combat. There are some encounters that are really tricky, but I didn't have too much trouble with them. I was definitely in awe that I was able to do all of these things at the same time and manage it, but definitely just a good pacing, especially for a short game. To jam-pack all of that, even when they add in a lot of extras that you don't have to do, that's really where a lot of the challenge comes in, not necessarily on the main quest path, but a lot of the extra things that you're going to find, even some of the secrets. And again, I'm playing through on normal. Some of them were really tough. Even the platforming challenges, I found to be really satisfying. But this is a perfect game for our catalog. It's another manageable and rewarding game that really respects your time, especially if you're a completionist. If you want to, you can go out and get all the things. I think you could get everything in this game in under 10 hours, which is kind of what I'm trying to do. But I love that it respects your time. And everything about this game is so charming. The aspects of Mexico and the lucha libre, the Mexican wrestler, like there's just so much that hits you over the head. This charm, this wit, the silliness, especially in some of the dialogue, just one-liners that come in. They really just add to the charm. You're going to smile so much while you're playing this game. And a lot of respect for the Mexican lore and the culture. And especially if you don't know a lot about it, it's really something that is enjoyable. Not to mention the music and the color. And hopefully the music that we've been playing throughout the episode has really caught you. In terms of value, I think $15 is great for this game. I think the vibe and the solid amount of challenge and content is just so worth it. I do always see this game on sale, a lot of times for like $5. It's an absolute steal. I mean, there's not much I can say. I got this on PlayStation Plus, so I didn't pay anything extra for it. But I'm just so glad that a game like this exists. If you're a Metroidvania fan, it's definitely right up your alley, especially if you're looking for something fresh in terms of the content and the setting and all that. Really just a breath of fresh air. Or if you're someone who has not played a Metroidvania, a new player to the genre, like take my wife. I mean, she really loved the charm of this game and the fact that you could turn into a chicken or a rooster. She was raving about that. So even if you're like her, somebody who doesn't really like Metroidvanias or the challenge of that or the different aspects or certainly not the backtracking, this is something that's so bite-sized that could really be a nice intro into the genre for you. And so I highly recommend that everyone play this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.